Yesterday's storm got pretty intense. When I left work, pelted by rain, heavy winds threatened to turn my admittedly flimsy umbrella inside out. This is just one kind of weather that Midwestern weather phobes might dread. I'm Gina Kaufman. On today's Central Standard, we'll meet a mother-daughter research team looking into severe weather phobias. When severe weather strikes, does fear of the elements cause you to alter your behavior in drastic ways? Tell us about it. Plus, the rain put a real damper on that Royals game scheduled for last night. Hear about KCUR's face-off with the public radio station in Baltimore at this American League Championship Series, right after this news. It's raining, it's pouring. This weather is great. Okay, it's great, but maybe also a little scary. And when my phone starts screaming at me with these newfangled weather alerts, that just plain old freaks me out, and I suspect I'm not alone. I'm Gina Kaufman. On today's Central Standard, we're talking about a fear of severe weather so intense it qualifies as a phobia. Do you have a severe weather phobia or know someone who does? Tell us the story at 816-235-2888. Let's talk about the weather. Seriously, I want to talk about the weather. Some people hear tornado sirens and put their feet up on their ottomans, casually watching television as meteorologists urge them to go to the freaking basement. Others head to the basement with provisions long before the sirens go off. And those are the people we're talking about today. My guests are a pair of researchers, a mother-daughter team. They've been at the forefront of looking into severe weather phobias and trying to understand what causes them. The mother works in the field of psychology, and the daughter is a climatologist. I'd like to start by introducing Karen Moulton from KU's Department of Psychology. She joins us from the studios of Kansas Public Radio. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Gina.
What is the definition of a phobia?
A phobia is a very strong fear or anxiety about a situation or a specific object. And the situation, in this case, severe weather, almost always provokes immediate fear or anxiety. And the situation is actively avoided, and the fear is out of proportion to the actual danger.
Okay, so that's the difference between a fear and a phobia, but the proportion of the danger is something that might be really hard to pinpoint when it comes to severe weather, because tornadoes, for example, have wiped out entire blocks, and even an entire small town in Kansas. So how do you quantify how frightened it is reasonable and proportional to be with respect to something like that?
Well, sometimes when it's, when you get a tornado warning, of course you're going to have fear and you're going to take precautions. That's what you're expected to do. But in this case, just hearing about a possible thunderstorm, maybe 5 days in the future, someone will get so anxious about it that they will experience physical symptoms and psychological symptoms like anxiety, and then they'll also do things like, I know this one person will drive 200 miles away to get out of the path of a possible thunderstorm that may happen a few days in the future.
So that does sound pretty like something that would really interfere with your life. How long has severe weather phobia been recognized by psychologists as a thing that exists?
Well, phobia has been recognized for a long time, but severe weather phobia comes under a category of natural phenomenon. So there's other things like some people are afraid of water, some people are afraid of heights. But the term severe weather phobia came in 2006. A psychologist from the University of Iowa, John Westerfield, published an article. And our article is actually a follow-up of that study, but using a much broader population than just college students.
So why do you think that this needs to be looked at more deeply and studied among a greater selection of people?
Well, I think you said it a few minutes ago that if it affects some aspect of your life, so your social life, your work life, if you like decide you're not going to go into work because there's a possible thunderstorm, or your social life, you're going to stay in the house and not go out and see friends, and because of rain. Some people are even afraid of clouds. There's an actual term for people that are afraid of clouds.
Afraid of clouds. What is? Can you just maybe explain to me what the fear is there? What is it about a cloud?
Well, it's called nephrophobia, and so people obsessively, you know, look at the skies and try to look at the different clouds and determine which ones might be dangerous. I think that's where some education can come in, and that's why I collaborated with my daughter, Jill Coleman, who's a climatologist.
Well, actually, Jill is also with us on the line. She's with us from Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, and as we've just heard, she's Karen's daughter. She's a geographer and climatologist. Hi, Jill.
Good morning, Gina.
So as a climatologist, you are clearly interested in weather, but when did severe weather phobia catch your interest? How did that come about?
Well, really, as my mother mentioned, we saw this article a few years ago, and we kind of thought this would potentially be a good idea for us to collaborate with, and we kind of put it off to a side. And then she had a couple of students that said, hey, we want to study something with phobia. And my mother and I said, well, this is a perfect opportunity for us to finally collaborate.
So you've wanted to collaborate for a long time.
Yes. We're both in kind of very disparate fields, but we found this was a very nice common ground between the two of us.
We have published together encyclopedia articles on statistical techniques, but we wanted to do something major study. And so when my two doctoral students, Kaylee Newby and Cynthia Taylor, approached me about doing something with phobia, I said, well, that's too broad a field, so we've got to narrow it down. And weather phobia came up, and we started collaborating with my daughter.
Jill, working in climatology research, did you get any pushback against the idea that people's psychological responses to weather are as important to study and understand as the weather phenomena themselves?
Well, I think it's a two-sided coin. I mean, you need to have the public be, you know, aware of what's going on, why the weather is caused the way it is. But we also need people to be able to take action when they hear about these type of things. You know, as my mother said, you know, that's kind of the really difference between fear and phobia. You know, fear, yes, we want people to have some fear about the severe weather. We want them to understand, you know, when it's critical to take action. But those that are in phobia are people that maybe wouldn't take action. Your fears actually prevent them from doing the appropriate action. So as a climatologist and meteorologist, I'm really interested in people's responses. You know, we can give people information about, you know, what to take action, what's important in part of weather, but we ultimately want them to take action.
We want your questions and stories about severe weather phobias. We Midwesterners are afflicted with all kinds of weather to be really legitimately afraid of at times. Hail, tornadoes, blizzards, streets covered in thick sheets of ice, flash floods, microbursts. Bet you didn't even think of that one. Call 816-235-2888 with your weather phobia confessions. And that number again, 816-235-2888. I'd like to maybe start us off with a confession of my own about this. Do you guys have time for that?
Sure.
Okay. I'll start by saying I'm over it now. But a few years back, I was in a car accident. It was raining out and the rain was sort of a light drizzle, but it switched to being a very hard rain very quickly. And I was in the center lane on a highway and I got into a car accident and I couldn't see what was happening during the accident itself, which was very scary to be going at that speed. And I was not speeding, I will say. I was actually going a little under the speed limit because the streets were wet. But still, at the end of the accident, you know, got out of my car and was frankly just shocked to be fine. And for a while after that, if I would try to get in the car and drive while it was raining, especially raining heavily, I would have like physiological responses that kept me from being a competent driver, I would say. And that lasted for a little while. I did get over it. But I understand this idea of, you know, rearranging your life, because while that was going on, if I had something I had to do that was a distance that could not be reached by public transportation or by foot, where I couldn't politely ask a friend for a ride, I would have to you know, reschedule an appointment, for example. Is that a common course of this, to have had an experience that leads to it, or does it usually?
Yes, it is. Many people can point out to a specific incident. In fact, in our research study, we did ask people if they could remember their first severe weather incident that caused some of their symptoms. And people would talk about, because we had a national sample, we also had like people that would say Hurricane Sandy, for example, or a particular blizzard in a certain year in a certain part of the country. But often people, you know, have those incidents that they can recall. In fact, most phobias will develop, though, much earlier, between the ages of about 7 and 11. The phobia, though, continues for longer than 6 months. So if you didn't have it for at least 6 months, it would not be termed a phobia.
Interesting.
Okay, because there's a very specific criteria in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders.
So
that,
something that
as
lasts,
a psychologist, we diagnose.
Something that lasts less than 6 months would be considered just sort of recovery from an incident.
Right.
That is really interesting.
And so you must, you know, have a form of resilience and ways of coping that you were able to get over it yourself.
So,
but some people are not able to.
Karen and Jill, I want you both to kind of tell me a little bit more about the study you conducted recently. I'll start with Jill. Jill, what can you tell us about the central question you were interested particularly in answering from your climatology background?
For me, I'm a climatologist in a geography department, so I was very interested in to see how weather phobia could vary across the country. I wanted to know, really, are certain people responding more to certain types of weather events? And that's kind of ultimately what we found out, what my mother just alluded to, is that, you know, when we started asking people, you know, what is the severe weather event that triggers your memories or triggers your phobias? And, you know, we found the East Coast, they're talking about hurricanes. The Midwest, we're talking about tornadoes and thunderstorms and floods. And out West, they're talking about wildfires and windstorms. So that's what my motivation really was thinking about the geography of it and then really thinking about what is people's, you know, weather knowledge, you know, if they have more knowledge about meteorology, does that allay fears or does it heighten fears?
And what did you find with respect to that question, that last question you asked about how knowledge affects this?
Well, actually, we found a surprising result. We kind of thought the people that were more weather knowledgeable would have less fears, but it was the reverse. The people, it seemed like if they knew more about the storms, it kind of heightened their anxiety. It seemed like, you know, if they knew what was coming more or less and could anticipate the results, further out, that's what started more of the phobia symptoms for that group of people.
Could this be kind of like a chicken and egg kind of thing where someone who is fearful of storms is compelled to do a lot of research and gather a lot of information, and then by the time the study arrives, it's hard to tease out whether the fear spawned the studying or the studying spawned the fear?
Yeah, and that's a question we're not sure of, and we found this initial surprising result, and this was kind of our initial pilot study to see if this was, you know, this was even prevalent. What did it vary geographically? What were the type of people's responses? And our answer is yes, this is worthy of study, and there's a lot more to study with it.
How prevalent is severe weather phobia? Karen, this is a question for you. Is it common? Like, where does it rank next to, say, fear of spiders?
It's the second most prevalent type of phobia in the umbrella of environmental phobia. I don't think there's not been enough studies to look at severe weather phobia to know where it ranks with other specific phobias. But underneath the umbrella of natural environment, which includes water, afraid of water, afraid of
afraid of water.
Heights. Yes, you know, like they won't go swimming.
Oh, not like to drink.
They'll just, you know, they'll stay out of the water. They won't go near the ocean.
Wow.
It's under that umbrella and heights also.
Why the interdisciplinary approach? I mean, on some level, a phobia is a phobia. Is the source of something significant to understand when you look at a phobia? What did a climatologist's perspective add for you, Karen?
Well, I think that's it was unique. We just presented at the American Psychological Association in August in Washington, D.C., together. And there were some other studies that were related to weather. And one was actually a presentation on climatology that Jill attended. And it was interesting because they were talking about climate change and the psychological aspects of climate change, but they didn't have a climatologist as part of their team. And I think it's very important if you're studying a specific phenomenon like this to have an interdisciplinary team.
Well, Central Standard is going to take a short break. When we return, we'll still have time for your severe weather stories. What scares you? And is it a phobia or a totally justified fear of the ruthless, arbitrary force we call weather? Call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and my guests are a mother-daughter team who studies severe weather phobias. The mother, Karen Moulton, is with us from KU's Department of Psychology. Hi again, Karen.
I'm actually from the Department of Psychology and Research and Education in the School of Education.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm a counseling psychologist.
Okay. And the daughter, Jill Coleman, is a climatologist at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, where she works in the geography department. Welcome back to the conversation, Jill.
Hi, Gina.
And so we've been talking about severe weather phobias. One of the things that's come up is that understanding the weather phenomena and what a proportional kind of fear and a proportional kind of response truly would be is an important part of understanding what a phobia would be, which would be an out of proportion fear, something that is interfering with a person's ability to live life. So, Jill, I have a question for you, which is right now, for example, we're having severe thunderstorms in Kansas City. Lightning does strike, streets do flood. What is your assessment of how dangerous a severe thunderstorm actually is?
Well, a severe thunderstorm is dangerous. I mean, if you're talking about lightning, being out, you want to obviously take precautions and go indoors. You don't want to be playing golf, right?
Right.
But it's really, we're talking about people and maybe having that debilitating fear that is going on for days. You know, we've had the forecast that it is going to be severe weather out in your area, and as well as we got bad weather out here in Indiana. And it's really talking about people that are obsessing about that for several days on end, will drive to other places, will completely avoid, going outside at all and completely changing their schedule. And it's getting to that point where people actually have even physical anxiety symptoms that we're most concerned about. I think everybody should have a little bit of a fear of severe weather. It's a good, healthy fear. You want to take precautions.
And you were talking before the break about a fear of climate change, which is probably a new kind of fear, something that is very of our time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, a little bit. People are, climate change is very much a buzzword, and people are very concerned about, potential with sea level rising, melting of ice sheets, more increased severe weather, and more variability in our weather. So, sure, there is definitely this talk and this potential fear. Whether or not people are fearful of certain things is something that we didn't study, but it's something of definite interest. I think I even ran across a term for fear of climate change now on the net.
Wow. And you guys in your family, I've heard that you have a personal connection to the subject of severe weather phobia.
Yes, that's my husband and Jill's father, Carl Moulton. we've been married 43 years, and he's had this weather issue for a while. Whenever there's, he monitors the TV and radio and internet very closely to see exactly what the weather conditions are going to be. And sometimes he will cancel things that I don't necessarily think he should cancel.
Well, and Jill, did this influence your interest in weather? I mean, you study climate. You grew up.
Oh, definitely. Watching my father, you know, he's always been kind of obsessed a little bit with the weather, but it is kind of amazing, you know, watching him, you know, change his schedule and talk about his fear and watching him, we lived in Missouri and Kansas and Illinois. And just watching him, you know, whenever a severe weather warning kind of hits, you know, he goes down to the basement. I always say he goes down in the bunkers and, you know, huddles down. And he even talked to me, you know, just seeing kind of the graphics of weather change over the years has kind of heightened his fears. You know, back in the day, radar images were just black and white. You know, the weather channel, you know, newscasters would kind of gloss over them. And today they're at the forefront of news, you know, forecast, you know, these bright red images and seeing, you know, these thunderstorms come in the area. It's kind of heightened his fears. And I kind of wonder if the, you know, how much the media has played a lot in kind of heightening phobias maybe among people.
So I want to get to other stories of other people who have experienced this, because we do have some people calling us at 816-235-2888. You can join the conversation that way, too. But let's turn to Mark in Fairway, Kansas. Hi, Mark.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was just kind of wondering about phobic transfer. And hypervigilance. My parents went through the Ruskin Heights tornado back in the 50s. And so whenever the red blobs appear on the radar, I would always get a telephone call from my mother making sure that I was aware that there were thunderstorms in the area and was I prepared for that and so forth. And so over the course of time, that made me always, you know, hyper vigilant to watch there and to make sure that when there was, that I was, you know, near a TV or had the radio on or, you know, or just kind of aware of what's going on. So hyper vigilancy and phobia, I'd like to know kind of the difference, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mark. Karen, maybe you can take that one.
I think, that's a very common way that some phobias do develop, is from parental, you know, influence. So as your children, who do you listen to the most is your parents. And so your parents' fears do have an impact on you. You know, as you become an adult, you have other influences, so it may or may not, you know, increase in severity, depending on other resources that you might have in your life. But, you know, certainly hypervigilance can be part of a fear. But, you know, as I said, the phobia has to be called phobia, it has to be very intense and impact several areas of functioning.
With something like the Ruskin Heights tornado, or if you think about Joplin a few years back or Greensburg, Kansas, that whole communities of people would have experienced an event like that. Is there like a collective trauma or a collective phobia? And what's the difference between, say, post-traumatic stress from something like that and a phobia? Or are they related?
Well, post-traumatic stress is related, but to be considered a post-traumatic stress disorder, it has to include other things such as nightmares, flashbacks, not being able to remember the specific incident that happened,
wow,
difficulty experiencing positive emotions such as happiness, joy, contentment, those kinds of things. So that's to be diagnosed as post-traumatic stress disorder, it is much more severe than phobia.
Yeah, you'd have to be doing more than watching the weather closely.
Right. And the same thing with panic attacks. Panic attacks is a separate category, but it's also related because you can have some experience that's similar to panic attacks. But panic attacks can occur at any time where phobia is connected strictly to a situation or an object like snakes, for example.
Let's hear from Mike in Lawrence. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I got caught in a really intense hailstorm outside of Emporia about 20 years ago, and I'm very hypervigilant about hail pretty much everywhere we go. We're on vacation or going to Oklahoma or doing, especially in Oklahoma, and doing stuff like that. I always keep an eye on the hail and stuff, and I kind of have a little of this more I thought of it, but I have a nephew who has an intense fear of storms because he was around his cousins whose home was flooded in Hurricane Katrina in Pascagoula, Mississippi, and they were driven to the attics, and they talked to him about that, and I saw the FEMA trailers and everything. I have kind of a situational phobia of really bad storm issues after seeing that stuff and with the hail stuff.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Do you think that, have you seen your symptoms change over time, or have ever since you've had this phobia, it's stayed as it is?
The hail stuff pretty much stays as is. I'm always pretty vigilant of hail.
I wonder if
Do you experience other...
Oh, please go on.
Do you experience other symptoms such as, heightened anxiety or even nausea or...
No, just the anxiety.
Just the anxiety. Okay, so none of the physical symptoms. And do you change, if you think that there's going to be a hailstorm, do you change your experience? Do you stay home and not go out?
I find places to put my car.
Okay. Well, you've had a loss, and those people that have a major loss, whether it's a loss of a property such as a car or a loss of, life or injury, are going to have, this heightened response. But for it to be severe, phobia, it would have to have more a constellation of symptoms than what you're experiencing. I think you have a heightened fear, but not the phobic response.
So heightened fear and phobia, that does seem like it's hard to tease out. And he was talking also about his nephew in Mississippi. It makes me wonder if you see a difference between severe weather phobia in places like the Midwest, where we have a certain kind of severe weather, and how they play out in other geographic locations where other kinds of weather is prevalent. If even just the time frame of how storms, how we find out about them, how we respond to them, if that affects how people's phobias play out.
Right. Those when they have major storms or like Hurricane Katrina, for example, that devastated, large areas of land and loss of homes, and people had to move, and some people died or were injured. Those have a great impact on a huge population, and so their crisis workers go in. And one of the things I would like to do is develop a kind of screening instrument to look at which people are most vulnerable to having long-term consequences of these major issues.
How would you begin to determine the answer to a question like that? Is that what your study is partly working on right now?
That's one of our next things I would like to look at is coming up with an easy measure for these crisis workers. Because some people are more vulnerable to stressors than other people. I mean, for example, you gave your story, and so you had a major stressor, that car accident, and you had some experiences right after that was directly related to that. But over time, those lessened.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And versus other people that are so vulnerable to this that it will last long periods of time, years.
And Jill, did you want to jump in on this question of the difference between how storms play out, different kinds of severe weather, and the nature of the phobia?
Right. That was one of the things, Stephen, too, is looking at people's responses. A lot of people, pointed out the specific events when we asked them open-ended responses that really impacted them. And they spent a lot of time talking about a particular hurricane or a particular blizzard or a particular tornado. And we saw that vary quite a bit regionally, as you might expect. And then as my mother was talking about, you know, she was talking about, you know, experiences of loss. And when we ask people, you know, have you ever had a loss associated with this event? And some people did have a very, you know, personal loss. Someone they knew, you know, perished in the event. But people also talked about, as you might expect, a lot of property-related losses, but also fear of losing loved ones or the loss of community, the loss of their social networks, the loss of relationships. And so that really points out to, you know, you're talking about, you know, these big mega losses where a town is wiped out, like Greensburg or like Joplin.
Let's hear very quickly from Kathy in Kansas City. Kathy, we have just a little bit of time, but what did you want to add to this conversation?
Hi, thank you. This is more of a comment. I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, terrified of tornadoes and have sat through way too many warnings and wall clouds where we'd either hide in the bathtub or in a closet or put a couch over us. When I moved to Kansas City at age 23 and discovered that houses had basements, the fear was totally gone.
So that sounds like it's a hopeful indication that there are practical changes that could be made that could affect how afraid people are, the degrees of a fear, and maybe even the degree of a phobia. Karen, what would you say about that?
I agree. I think she makes a very valid point. What about people that live in mobile homes? You know, you live in that type of a home where, you know, a big windstorm can have an impact on your house versus living in a house with a basement where you have a safe place to be.
Yeah, well, that makes complete sense that would affect how a person feels, how secure a person feels. And that's all the time we have for today's conversation. Jill Coleman, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And Karen Moulton, it's been great having you. Keep us posted on your research.
Thank you very much.
Karen Moulton was able to join us from Lawrence thanks to the good people at Kansas Public Radio. Earlier in the show, we spoke with Tom Hall of WYPR in Baltimore, and Patrick Quick produced the Royals music montage we played. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the business of making movies in Kansas City. Plus, we'll check in on the rapid fire changes determining whether Kansas clerks will or won't issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. If you want to listen back to today's show or any past shows, go to kcur.org/Central Standard. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's it for today. Stick around for Up to Date next.